Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, your host. True Wealth, as always, is brought to you by Coins Plus, your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. Coins Plus been here about 20 years doing the same thing. We buy and sell all forms of precious metals, scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds, coins, collections, estates, etc. We offer the highest-rated privately held depository service in the United States, or in how about the Northwest United States? It's very secure. I mean, just to simplify, our building is built from the ground up with security specifically as our goal. We have extraordinary, I don't know how in-depth to get, but the building is extremely secure. Concrete, steel, and Kevlar all over the place to keep it simple. Bulletin bomb-resistant polycarbonates, bomb-proof doors, Class 2 vaults wrapped in steel, 24/7 motion surveillance recorded at three separate locations, heat sensors, seismic detectors, and so on. You know, we talk to people regularly that want to invest, obviously, because that's what we do. And one question, when I built the building, one of the reasons I did the depository service is because people always, they'd come and invest and say, what do I do with it now? And where do I keep it? Well, we offer an extremely safe place to store. Very private, very anonymous. We're not obligated to FinCEN, which is the financial central agencies. It's private, it's anonymous. It's technically your own private storage area. It's accessible anytime. It's not tied in at a level. People think it's such a great deal, they get a tax break for their safe deposit box on their Schedule A itemized deductions. Now, why do you suppose they would give you a tax break or give you a tax credit for a depository box? It's hoping you're dumb enough to put it on there so they know where your assets are. And then, trust me, folks, in all my years of banking, I could not count the number of times people had issues with the IRS where they froze the box, okay? It can happen, and you might be the cleanest, nicest American individual. You've never had a problem. You've never done anything wrong. You've always been a patriot and paid your taxes. It doesn't change the fact that things happen. I've seen people get sued, and I've seen subpoenas of taxes where they have literally, they literally in the discovery process, they will request copies of the taxes. On the taxes, there's a safe deposit box. They'll get a court order to freeze the box before a person can get to it and empty it out. I mean, you know, there's an advantage to having a private anonymous storage location. Trust me. It's privacy. I've seen people go through bankruptcies on one entity of their life and be able to save others. And there's just no end to the reasons why our system is the best. It's also why precious metals-based assets are your best bet. It's very, very scriptural, folks. And I mean very scriptural. It is, you know, God introduces precious metals in Genesis 2, not just the mention of them, but he says the gold in the land of Havilah is good, and it's the highest rabbinical Hebrew word. It's a terrific word. It's tav. It's the most powerful, positive, meaningful word in the Old Testament. It's the word he used to describe that he saw his creation and saw that it was good. That's what he uses to describe gold. Now, that's not an accident. And then through the Bible we go. We have got endless references throughout the Bible, over 800 references to gold and silver throughout the Bible. And, you know, essentially we've got money. It's real money. I get people in here like, well, you know, I've got this money in this stock or this bond or this annuity, and I'm just really nervous about getting into gold and silver. And it's like, folks, gold and silver is God's money. It's real money. Just because you've been brainwashed doesn't change what's real. Gold and silver is money. This is real liquid money. There's work energy to accumulate it, But the fact of the matter is it's got so there's so many positive attributes and principles of gold and silver that are so unique. For example, gold is, it starts out that it won't tarnish. Nothing that is naturally occurring on Earth destroys gold. A volcano, I guess we would call, is maybe not quite naturally occurring. That's where gold is hypothetically created. There's some interesting theories about pre-flood, heavy gold accumulations, extraordinary pressure and things in the earth that crushed gold back up and made it available for us now and whatnot. But there's nothing on the earth that will destroy it or corrode it or oxidize it in its pure form. It's very soft. It's very beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous. It's completely malleable when it's soft, meaning you can work with it. It's got the most infinite molecular matrix makeup of any element. That sounds a little complicated. What I mean by that is it's infinitely divisible down to the molecular level. Many items will be brittle. They'll fall apart. They won't stay together. You can't cut them equally. Gold is infinitely divisible. God did that on purpose. It's absolutely gorgeous. It has incredible properties on the body. They say the pharaohs used to bathe in gold baths, gold dust. They'd have black sand and gold mixed. The amount of money that would be required to build one of these baths now would blow your mind. It'd be into the, countless millions of dollars. I mean, maybe $100 million to build some of these baths these pharaohs used to take just to fill them with gold. And some of the pharaohs lived 30 to 40 years longer than the people. Gold has very interesting magnetic properties. As well as being 100% conductive. So it'll carry electricity and currents and heat rapidly. What's interesting is gold doesn't get cold near as quickly as it gets hot. It attracts heat energy. It repels cold energy and attracts heat energy. So when it's on your body, if you take a piece of gold, a gold bracelet that's cold and you put it on, it's instantly warm. But if you take a hot bracelet and you put it in ice, it'll cool off slower than it'll heat up. And also if you put it back on, it just instantly adapts to your skin temperature. These are all things God put into it. I don't understand it. Silver's colloidal. Within 4 seconds of contact, silver kills all microorganisms immediately. So as I've mentioned, when we had silver in our change on a daily basis where we were exchanging money with silver, it actually prevented the spread of disease, at least by hand. Very unique. Now that we have tin and paper, it does not. As a matter of fact, even your credit card is the classic carrier of disease. You hand it to the teller, she touches it, or the checkout agent or whatever, boom. Whatever is on it, I'm telling you, they're getting it. It's just, God has a system. God's a pretty bright guy. I mean, that's kind of sounds dumb, but folks, think about it. I mean, it's so complex. It's such a complex design that we live within. If you ever really sit and think, just think from the lowest, smallest level of everything God's created, from the deepest, most singular, molecular, atomic level, okay? And then just kind of raise the bar from there. You go from atoms to molecules to, and you work your way up into single-celled organisms and multicelled, and then you get into things that are beautiful, that fly, and, you just go through the whole system and the ecosystem, how everything works together. There's not one creature on Earth that really takes over the whole Earth. In fact, we will have plagues throughout history where maybe there will be flies or locusts or something, but eventually even they self-destruct and the system renews itself. Pine beetles went through the Northwest here years back, destroying many, many pine trees. So the new forests that come up, the new trees have their own built-in resilience to the pine beetle. And interesting, you know, the Forest Service let it go too long before they tried to treat it. But nature takes care of itself. There are pine cones, many of them, that will only reproduce. They only open up in fire. Fire is a necessary part of nature. You know, the whole system's incredible. We live in an oxygen-rich environment where fire can burn, where we live in a very tight bandwidth of temperature relative to the universe and where it's possible. We have a very thick atmosphere to protect us from all kinds of things. I mean, I could go on and on, but it's, you know, our exact distance from the sun is so superb that if it fluctuates, if when our orbit fluctuates the least, it's, you know, we're gone instantaneously. And you can just do this balance game, you know, the amount of water based on rated towards land, the 80% water on Earth is the perfect balance for cleansing the atmosphere. We do have, you know, when people overemphasize pollution, there is truth to that in areas and ways, and there's other areas and ways that it's not true. The air pollution is not in general, if it's not heavy metals, in general, it will self-correct itself. The Earth has a system of cleansing through the rain and evaporation that will take care of it. One issue, and I didn't intend to go here, but I have a heart for it, folks, is plastics. Plastics, we really are destroying the Earth. And there are a lot of times when conservatives will take the perspective of, you know, folks, one thing I really despise, and I hope none of you ever say this, the attitude that, hey, I'm going to be out of here in a preterm rapture, so I don't really care. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to take care of this domain that God gave us. Or the attitude that, hey, God's in control of everything, man. I just kick back and go for the ride. That is absolutely not in the least what we are called to do. Folks, we are called to be excellent, extraordinary beings. We are to glorify God in our actions. We have to be the best examples to society. We have to set the bar. We have to have the greatest accomplishments. If I told you, you know, hypothetically, it's not true, but if I told you that, you know, the most Pulitzer Prizes and Nobel Peace Prizes or Nobel Prizes went to Christians for outstanding performance, you would say, that's awesome. But if I told you, if I said, hey, you know, no prizes for any kind of intellectual accomplishment whatsoever has ever gone to a Christian because we're not supposed to be part of this world. We're supposed to be separate. Do you really think that would set any example for anybody that would be admirable? No. Great things happen at the hand of God. The most incredible stories of redemption and victory come to believers, men who start out homeless with their own child in the street, and they read the Bible, and they pray, and they work hard, and they end up being one of the top stockbrokers in New York. Not that I'm a big fan of stockbrokers, but hey, what an accomplishment, right? Mothers who overcome the impossible with multiple children and no husband. These are the things that Christians do. This is what Christ is about. Christ is about liberating us, setting us free. Our sin puts us into bondage. Our sin breaks us down, okay? When people, you know, I've dealt here recently with an individual who has had a lifetime battle with addictions. He's been through numerous treatment centers and all kinds of stuff. The biggest problem with all that, and the problems in his life abound. He quits his job. He gets mad. He just, you know, everything's impulsive. He needs extra attention. He needs extra affirmation. All that stuff because of the self-centeredness. The extreme people who have extreme addictions are extremely self-centered. They really don't. They are oversensitive to attention and approval. They want. You know, they do what the average person gets up and goes to work every day and does their job. And a person who's got a severely addictive personality wants extra attention. They work 2 hours extra one night. They want 2 hours off the next day. You know, that kind of thing. And, you know, addiction, severe addiction is very self-centered. There is the physiological addiction, and then there is the psychological or the life-destroying addiction. You can get addicted to opioids by taking too many for too long. That's not the kind of addiction I'm talking about. I'm talking about the psychological addict that will choose the drugs or alcohol over everything and everybody in their life. It's extraordinarily self-centered. And you know, this is the opposite of what God calls us to do and be. Addiction itself is a human tragedy. It is not by crying out about the opioid crisis and creating a more radical, hardcore drug war, folks, it is not going to solve a problem. The problem is people's needs. Why do they need this stuff? Why? They need it because they have pain and suffering and sorrow and trauma. So much addiction stems around early childhood trauma. And there's some terrible things that happen to children. Parents, especially if chemicals are involved with adults, the things that they will do and say to children. Children need a safety refuge. If you ever know of anybody doing heinous acts towards a child, you've got to use your head to get that child out of that situation. You've got to gather evidence. You've got to be wise. Jesus said, be wise as serpents, innocent as doves. Don't be a foolish idiot and barge in and tip your hat and give away your cards when you're not ready. I mean, be wise. If you need to help to dissect a situation like that, document, videotape, do whatever you have to do, but preserve the children. Jesus is so clear in Luke maybe 18, where he talks about having the heart of a child, right? And then he comes through, and then all of a sudden he changes his tone. I want you to look at this. I'm going to look this up. I didn't really intend to talk about it. I never do. Okay, so, oops, that's not the right one. Oh, boy. That's too bad. Well, I can't remember what it is now. But anyway, I basically it's the scripture where he pulls a child to himself. And he says that you need to basically have a heart like a child. We need to have the same heart as a child. And he goes on to explain that. Oh, man, I wish I could find this. I apologize. It drives me nuts. I thought I had it. But basically, all of a sudden, he turns. He says, it's inevitable that stumbling blocks come. Okay, he says, it's inevitable that stumbling blocks come. It's Luke 17. But woe to him through whom they come. So he's saying, there are bad people in the world. But woe to the bad person that carries this forward. Then he says, now here's my theory. My theory is, Jesus Christ is standing in a crowd, and there's a child molester in that crowd. The child that's been molested is there, and the molester is there. Now, you got to put reality and realism into Jesus's parables. He was speaking to real people, and he was led by the Spirit. He was the Spirit, right? And so things aren't random. And when you see him light up like this, like you're going to see in the scripture, you need to think, what's going on here? Always think, who was in the crowd? What triggered this? So listen. He said to his disciples, and the disciples thought it was important enough to document. This left an impression with them. You have to understand, folks, they didn't write down probably a minute fraction of what Jesus did. But certain events and episodes really stood out to them. This one, he says, it's inevitable that stumbling blocks come, but woe to him through whom they come. And he says, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea than that he would cause one of these little ones to stumble. Okay? Now down below, after he gets through all this stuff, he actually gets to a point, and I'll go back up, and he gets to a point where he basically explains that he's going to cast them into the eternal flames, right? And then actually it isn't Luke 17. This starts out the same way. Interesting. Sorry, I'm butchering this. I apologize sincerely. This is still not it. But basically he goes on and he says, if your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. And then he says, you know, if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. And he's basically goes through and he has a child. He brings a child to his side and he basically says, if you do anything to these children, you are so much better off if a millstone be tied around your neck and you be thrown into the ocean than when I get my hands on you and cast you into the eternal flames. And I apologize for butchering it a little bit. I think I can get to it in another one, Mark 9 here. The Son of Man is to be delivered. Sitting down, he called the 12 and said, if anyone wants to be first, let him be last. Then in Mark, there's a little different spin on it. Taking a child, he set him before them, and taking him in his arms, he said to them, whoever receives one child like this in my name receives me, and whoever receives me does not receive me. Whoever receives one child like this in my name receives me, and whoever receives me does not receive me, but him who sent me. Then John said, teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name. And I guess this isn't my day. So anyway, let's just move on here a little bit. So I can't believe I'm striking out like this. So anyway, that's what happens when you're not ready to go. When you go into topics that you should not. Interesting. Maybe this is my last shot. This is my last try. I won't do this again to you. Here it is. Maybe it's Matthew 18. Here we go. And whoever receives one such child. Okay, here we are. It's Matthew 18. I thought it was Luke. Whoever them humbles. Okay, he says, truly I say to you, unless you are converted and become like children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever then humbles himself as this child, he is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Got to have a heart of a child. Whoever receives one such child in my name receives me. One such child in my name. Think about that. You watch out for the children, folks. You are the eyes and the ears of the children. As a believer in Jesus Christ, you are the eyes and the ears of these children. You protect these children, okay? There are bad things that happen to children, and the reason I'm onto it, I'll tell you what. The last few days, God's kind of brought some things to my attention that have happened to people I know, sex slavery, sex trafficking, child molestation, really bad stuff, you know, and maybe God dumps it on me to get me preaching to you. But it says, whoever receives one such child in my name receives me. Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it would be better for him to have a heavy millstone hung around his neck and be drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe to the world because of the stumbling blocks, for it is inevitable that stumbling blocks come, but woe to that man through whom the stumbling block comes. And the thing is, folks, you know, we get things out of context, we translate them improperly. The word is skandalion, from where we get scandal. That's the Greek word. And it basically means it's a trap or a snare, okay? It's a severe impediment placed in the way, causing one to fall. It's bad, okay? The Greek word is a very bad word. And it's basically, this isn't saying it's not a minor thing. We'll just say it's something very profound he's referring to. Then he jumps immediately from the stumbling block. Woe to the man through the stumbling block. Then what does he say? Okay, so he's saying, woe to you. And here, listen to his next response. If your hand or your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it from you. It's better for you to enter life crippled or lame than to have two hands or two feet and be cast into the eternal fire. Whatever he's talking about here, he's casting this man into hell. I know some specific situations where people have done some hellacious molestation. Later on, phony repentance after they get caught, they go to prison. Oh, they come to Jesus or they go back to Jesus. I'm not reading that here, folks. Severe child molestation, we have shown over and over psychologically, physiologically, psychiatrically, these people cannot be cured. It becomes their sexual preference for life, okay? It doesn't change. You've got to understand, this stuff is impressed in these people's brains. In these predators, this their sexual taste has been impressed for life. This is why the Old Testament tells us to specifically stone these people and get rid of them. They're not curable, and there may be, in some cases, generational curses or even DNA, genetic pass-ons. So God cleanses them. When Jesus says, woe to you through the stumbling block, and then when he's telling you something, this isn't figurative. I want to tell you something. Jesus was never sarcastic, okay? Jesus didn't mince words or waste them. If he said, cut your hand or your foot off, and he was saying that to somebody while he's referring to somebody who's a stumbling block for a child, he's not joking around. He's not using some stupid innuendo. He's saying, you are better off cutting off your hand if it's causing you to do something that is really repulsive to this child than for you, because you will be burning in hell eternally. He also says you'd be better off with a millstone around your neck and thrown into the sea, because that's the only way you're going to stop. He says, if your hand or foot causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it far from you. It's better for you to enter life crippled or lame than to have two hands or two feet and be cast into the eternal hellfire. If your eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out, throw it from you. It's better for you to enter life with one eye than to have two eyes and be cast into the fiery hell. Now, you tell me Jesus wasn't dealing with a specific circumstance here. Otherwise, where would it come from? He goes from child to stumbling block to chopping off body parts to throwing you into hell. And he starts with casting a millstone around your neck and throwing you in the ocean. This is heavy stuff, okay? See that you do not despise one of these little ones, he says. For I say to you that their angels in heaven continually see the face of my Father who is in heaven. For the Son of Man has come to save that which is lost. Now think of this. There are angels that are specifically assigned to each one of us. There are angels whose faces are turned towards God all the time. God is looking into the face of that angel that represents that child. From that point forward, we're given nothing. But I don't know if the angel weeps. I don't know if the angel is doing intercessory prayer. We know God says that the Holy Spirit will intercede. We don't know the system. People simplify things and we say, no, it says the Holy Spirit intercedes for us, so that must just be what it means. Well, we don't know the inner workings of heaven. We don't know the inner workings of God's system. Maybe those prayers go through angels. Maybe they're, I don't know. We don't know. It's saying to us right now that their angels in heaven continually see the face of my Father who is in heaven. Everything is revealed. God is watching these heinous acts. And folks, I'm telling you, I spoke to an individual lady yesterday who counsels people in these situations, and it's sad. It's sad is way too light of a word. It is a sick, bad thing. People traumatize these children. They fracture their personalities so that these children have identity crises the rest of their life. People that experience trauma in youth, whether it's molestation or growing up in a hardcore alcoholic home, they end up with these eruptive emotional personalities, and they'll be the sweetest people you've ever met on earth, And then they have two other personalities typically that I've seen. They'll have the withdrawn child, and they'll have the overcoming adult. So they'll end up with a withdrawn child that just weeps and moans and puts her head down. And then they'll have this arrogant, angry adult that comes crashing out of them to protect them once in a while when they think they're being offended, which is usually an inappropriate perspective, especially if they're in an intimate relationship with a spouse. But it really does. It carries sin forward into society. And when it says the sins of the father carry on to the third or fourth generation and people get into generational curses and all that, folks, bottom line is a lot of that's just simple physiology. Society functions in a four generation rotation. There's the book that came out years back called The Fourth Turning. There is literally a four-year generation. We are in the, it basically runs in a little over 10-year cycle, whatever the cycle of childbearing is. But essentially, we're sitting now in another 60s-type era. We have this radical, rebellious, group of children that come from, you have the 60s children, and then, I won't get into it because I haven't studied it enough, but basically you'll get this highly productive, mature part of society, and then, the pendulum swings back and forth. And you look at the generation that had their gold removed in the 30s, and it takes all the way till now, till this generation's absolutely clueless. They have no clue. Manipulation's been done. Abscondery has taken place. Their wealth has been fleeced. We've got issues in this nation you can't even fathom financially. We are literally bankrupt and people don't know it. So when it says that the sins of the father carry on to the third or fourth generations, what it's telling you is there's a physiological side. There's absolutely a spiritual side as well. And the thing is eventually that spiritual side, maybe it gets broken. Maybe, I don't know. We don't know. But the Bible does also say that you should never hold a child responsible for what their parent has done, which is what communist countries do. And when you go back and you look at these wars that we've fought against communism in these foolish, idiotic children that are out there, screaming over the top of people, calling it their free speech rights. We're seeing this garbage at Columbia University in Berkeley, and they say that they're exercising their free speech rights. The problem is, folks, we have lost all dignity and respect and honor and duty in this country. We've lost etiquette. Do you know there was a time, my mother's in her 70s, mid to upper 70s, there was a time that they actually had like a charm school. They had finishing school for girls. Girls could literally go learn how to be really good women and housewives. Now they're ashamed. Oh, I'm ashamed to be a woman. I'm ashamed to be a housewife. I'm ashamed to be a stay-at-home mom with my children. I'm ashamed to be a good cook and a great housekeeper. Folks, that when I was in school, the young lad that I was, we had home economics in junior high, and it was primarily for women, but weird guys like me took it, and it was called home economics for a reason, because it taught girls how to be good wives. It taught them how to budget a checkbook. It taught them how to shop. It taught them how to save. It taught them how to sew. It taught them how to cook. It gave them all these great experiences. It taught them how to do a place setting. It taught them that you're supposed to pass to the left. Maybe you didn't know that. You're always supposed to pass to the left. If you're at a dinner table, you pass to the left. If you want something that's a little too far away, you ask someone to hand it to you. There's all kinds of things that you do and don't do with etiquette. And that was a couple dumb ones, but there's probably a lot more important things. But this is the society that we've abandoned. And we act like we're progressing because we have progressives running our society. We're not progressing. We're digressing. We're falling further and further away from God. And we're becoming repulsive. In his nature, we are his creation. We are here to glorify him. We are here to magnify him. That's it. That's why we're here, folks. Everything about it is for God's glory. Our entire existence, I don't care what you believe. I don't care if you don't believe there's a God. That doesn't change a thing. The concept that everything happened by accident is so ridiculously stupid, it's foolish. And people say, well, it's just as dumb to think there's a God. Really? From the beginning of history, man has had imprinted on their heart the knowledge of a God. If you do accurate, honest study, you will find that civilization has had primarily the same sets of morals and objectives that they determined to be right and wrong since the beginning. Now, they'll go to some, you know, tribe. Well, we dug up this tribe of half-monkey people in Africa, and we see here that it was morally correct to eat your children or something. You know, that I don't even know. I don't even want to go into that stuff. They come up with this rubbish. Like, they're going to get this deep meaning by digging in Africa, searching for the first man. Because the first man had to be in Africa, right? Even though we know there's Pangaea. I mean, I won't even get into it. And they think that it's been millions of years. We know that the Earth's continents are shifting. But, of course, we think they've been shifting over billions of years. The Earth has not been here for billions of years. There is not even remotely close to enough sediment on the Earth to even justify that theory. There's not even enough sediment on the moon to justify that theory. Something happened. Something was created. So anyway, let's go on. Jesus is talking about children here. See that you do not despise one of these little ones. For I say to you that their angels in heaven continually see the face of my Father who's in heaven. For the Son of Man has come to save that which was lost. That's us. And then he goes on about Jesus looking and caring. What do you think? He says, if any man has 100 sheep and one of them has gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountain and go look for the one? Of course he does. He cares about us, folks. If it turns out that he finds it, truly I say to you, he rejoices over it more than over the 99 which have not gone astray. So it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones perish. And then he goes on, if your brother sins, go and show him his fault in private. If he listens to you, you've won your brother. If he doesn't listen, take one or two more with you. And he goes on that whole thing. But in basically how to resolve conflict and how to bring people back to the fold. To Jesus, it's important. He hates to see us lost and fallen. But children are innocent. And I'll just leave it at that, folks. I'm going to tell you, don't mess around, okay? I mean, if you see something like that, go for it. Now, I'm going to bounce back in here a little bit. I got a whole bunch of stuff up that I wish I could cover, and I can't. There's a recent, I guess, article came out. There's a lot of information out there right now about the corrupted perspective and the new way that the Democratic left-wing operatives are functioning. Number one, we have Obama, who's left, and I've discussed this. He's running what's called OFA, Organization for Action, okay? It's shaping up to be a highly unusual post-presidency, unique, like never before. We've never seen anything like this before. He's not just staying behind in Washington. He's working behind the scenes to set up what they say is effectively a shadow government to not only protect his threatened legacy, but to sabotage the America First agenda. So there is so much going into this. He's doing it through a network of leftist nonprofits led by his Organization for Action. And normally they say you'd expect an organization set up to support a politician and his agenda to close up shop after the candidate leaves office. Not Obama's OFA. Rather, it's gearing up for battle with a growing war chest in more than 250 offices around the country. And then since Donald Trump's election, this little-known but well-funded protesting arm has beefed up staff and ramped up the recruitment of young liberal activists, declaring on its own websites, "We're not backing down." Determined to salvage Obama's legacy, it's drawing battle lines on immigration, Obamacare, race relations, climate change, abortion, and so on. Okay, let's just touch on this real quick. Why are these important? Determined to salvage Obama's legacy, it's drawing battle lines on what? Immigration. Folks, right now what's happening in America, Americans are assimilating to our foreign immigrants, not the other way around. Our country should have immigration at a pace that requires the immigrants to adapt to our culture, not us to theirs. Currently in LA, they say that over half of the families speak a language other than English. This is what has happened here, folks. We have Spanish-speaking schools and so on. We are making Americans assimilate to foreigners' culture. We are losing our Christian heritage and our Christian base. We are letting countries in mass that are not Judeo-Christian in their fundamental precepts, where we've got heavy Buddhist influence. We've got a lot of Indians, not as in Native Americans. I'm talking about Hindu. We have got an incredible, powerful influx of Islam. And folks, I want to tell you, you all know people that suck all the oxygen out of the room. They're needy. They're loud. They're obnoxious. You cannot be at peace with those people. There are just people like that. Okay. I've had people work here like that, where the whole atmosphere changes. It's just one conflict after the next, etc. This is what Islam brings to the table. Okay. Islam brings controversy. Now, people say to me, oh, that's not true at all. I know a Muslim. I'm very good friends with a Muslim, and he is a peace-loving individual. He is a good person. Now, on the outset, sure, we are created in God's image. We can all have traits that are very desirable. That's not hard to believe. Just because we wear the badge of a religion doesn't mean it changes all of our personality. But the religion as a whole has issues. I don't think I need to spend a lot of time convincing you of that. I would hope that most of us have enough knowledge of Islam, its history, and its behavior to know exactly what I'm talking about. It is the elephant in the room, okay? It poses the greatest threat to this nation. We need to understand what's going on in this country. Now, to wrap that immigration thing up, the bottom line is they want votes. Now, they vote illegally now. All these people, they're able to work and do all this stuff without even having a citizenship. I mean, we've got colleges now that are educating illegal immigrant attorneys, and they can go into practice, and they're not even legal citizens. And then we say, oh, but look at their great accomplishments. Look at this. Look at that. We have to be more patient with them. No, we don't. The rules were broken when they entered the country. Now, the DACA thing, you know, the Dreamers Act, these kids that are brought here involuntarily by their parents because their parents think that once they're on our soil, they're citizens. Trump says, sure, I'll pass that. I'll agree to that. Just give me the funding for the wall. Of course, the left won't do it. They need these people to swing elections towards the left, folks. Terrifying. We have the fiat currency system, Federal Reserve System, fleecing the wealth of America harshly, okay? And as we bankrupt America, illegal immigrants qualify for every kind of entitlement program you can imagine, and I'm not exaggerating. They've got many that are unique to them that natural-born citizens cannot have. They get them dependent on our socialistic, you know, system. And then they vote. And what do they vote for? More socialism, more, you know, democratic deception. Folks, we are heading towards socialism. It is a great threat. It is the great destroyer of every good nation. God created a system of authority. He's told us that. We criticize kingships and things like that because absolute power corrupts and we end up with tyrannical leadership. Our nation was founded by shattering the chains of bondage that had been handed down from tyrannical leadership. We've struggled with slavery. We're currently being held under what's called social justice. Social justice puts groups of people, they judge you for the group you belong to. Oh, you're a Christian? You are responsible for the Crusades killing these and those people. Sidebar real quick. the propaganda you get on the Crusades, which is totally not completely relevant here, is a bunch of lies. The Crusades that are held in contempt for killing groups of people on in most 95% of the cases were severely justified. Just like it's just that we get false information. Just like the information that Christopher Columbus had slaves. Yes, he did. They were slaves that he saved from a cannibal tribe in the Caribbean had been attacking these other tribes and eating them. They attacked Christopher Columbus's men and ate some of them. And Christopher Columbus says, no more of this. And he puts together a band of men and they go in and they conquer these people. The other tribes in the Caribbean rejoice. And they want to destroy them all. And Christopher Columbus says, I'm not completely comfortable with that. Isn't there something a little more constructive that we can do? And they decide to he takes as many men as he can back to England for slavery. And we always think of slaves being on a post getting whipped. That's not the case. Many of them worked and lived very productive lives. They were given homes and income, and they were able to raise families in peace. They just worked. And they got everything paid for. It was a different type of poverty. But the thing was, is they had what they needed to live and get by. It was a lifestyle. And it's, you know, I'm not justifying it, but I'm saying not every single slave was beaten and misused and hated. Now, racism, yes, had run rampant in any country with slavery. It's very sad. And it's very wrong. But the fact of the matter is that we are now under social justice being judged for the acts of the past of our ancestors and founders and whatnot. Misrepresented propaganda, like I said, the Crusades and so on. Social justice holds you accountable for whatever group they choose to put you into, which will always be a group that they believe works to their advantage and your disadvantage, okay? So you can't buy into social justice. We need to be judged as individuals. God judges us individually based on our own individual actions. Social justice judges you based on a group, okay? God doesn't judge you based on a group. God doesn't say, you're born a white male Protestant, you know, blah, 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 and we've had so many problems with white males. You're all going to hell. That's not just. It's the exact opposite. And this is what's happening on the campuses. Somehow the minorities are all the good ones. You know, they've never done anything wrong or whatever. It's not right, okay? We've lost our minds there. The immigration issue is everything. It is the foundation of this nation. We have been, and you know, they change from illegal immigration. The conversation immediately goes to immigration. They start to convolute facts. The bottom line is simple. They want the votes. They don't care if it bankrupts us or not. Okay, another topic that he's after is abortion. Okay, obviously, I won't even get into that. We all know that's bad. Obamacare, why? Cloward and Piven strategy. It's social medicine. It bankrupts society and forces us into a third world bankrupt status. This concept of socialism that you're going to make the rich your slaves, they're going to produce all this income and everyone else is going to live off of it, is sheer stupidity. The taxation in this nation has gone rampant wild. It's not right. It's not good. It's not okay. It's unconstitutional. Our founding fathers forbid it. And I don't care what we think of it. It's wrong, biblically and constitutionally. We have the ability to reap the fruits of our labor. If you want to make if a society needs money to function, you learn how to collect taxes on consumption. That way, a rich man spends more money than a poor man, and the rich man ends up paying taxes, but it's by choice, and that's just the way it's got to be. Punishing somebody for being productive, punishing somebody for being successful, having an Obama mentality that successful people are vile, hideous, wretched people is out of control. We get these people that have so much power and so much delusion, billionaires in general. There's one that's putting $30 million into an impeached Trump campaign when in reality, I think he wants to run a campaign. He's out of California. So anyway, we know where they're going, we know what they're doing, and we know why. Race relations and climate change. Race relations is a no-brainer. We've got to have division. We've got to, now I'm not saying this is from Obama's perspective. We've got to have division. We've got to have rebellion. They thrive on it. People get emboldened and empowered by it. Social justice again. You tell this group of people they're superior to that group of people, folks. Now we are capitalizing on the number one downfall of democracy, that 51% of the people can vote to kill 49. You think that's far-fetched? It happens. 51% of the population votes to take from the 49, or 60 votes to take from the 40%. Whatever it may be, this is why they want race relations. If you look at this stuff, it's all about division. Immigration is division, right? You've got the new, you know, illegals and minorities, Obamacare. It's about division. It's about those who produce saying, I can't afford to pay everybody's health care. It's about those that want socialism, demanding, gimme, gimme, gimme. And then now I'm not going to tell you that health care isn't a mess and it needs a lot of work. And if I was there, I have my own theories, but I don't get to run for president because I'm not a billionaire. And race relations and climate change. Race is obvious. Climate change is another one. Why? It's more government control. We can't change the climate. I mean, in general, and it's not hurting us anyway. And just because the climate is warming up, which I believe it is, 6,000 years ago, we had an ice age. We know the climate's warming up. But I like how they go from climate or whatever they call it, global heating or whatever it was, global warming. Now we're at climate change. Every hurricane, every storm, everything's caused by us. And this new Obama-ridden generation is so naive, they don't even realize how brainwashed they are. So Obama's intimately involved in this OFA, it's Organizing for Action. I can't remember it because it's not right. Operations, and even he tweets from the group's account. In fact, he gave marching orders to the OFA foot soldiers following Trump's victory. He said, it's fine for everybody to feel stressed, sad, and discouraged, he said in a conference call from the White House. He says, but get over it, he demanded. Now we're going to move forward and protect what I've accomplished. Now is the time for us to organize and rebel. He said, so don't mope. So far from sulking, the OFA activists are organizing anti-Trump marches across the U.S. cities. They started right away and they've kept it up. These have turned into riots all over the place. And then Trump issued a temporary ban on immigration after he did this, the temporary ban on immigration from 7 very terror-prone Muslim nations, folks, where there's no way to check who's coming or going. The demonstrators jammed airports, chanting, no ban, no wall, sanctuary for all. And I don't have a lot more time to get into that today. It's basically run by old Obama aides. There's 35,000 volunteers. It's registered as a 501c. It doesn't have to disclose any of its donors, but they've already collected over $40 million in contributions and grants since evolving from Obama's campaign organizing Obama for America in 2013. George Soros has his own organization called Open Society Projects, folks. We are under threat, under attack. That is what is behind all of this stuff, okay? Now, the other thing I did not get to today, there's great development in the Russia scandal. Things are spinning. They're twisting around. They're turning. All of a sudden, all this attack on Trump, and by the way, it's gone on long enough that Trump has been able to prove himself pure, which is awesome. And now all of a sudden we're finding all this corruption and collusion, and that the Uranium One deal, Hillary Clinton got $145 million put into the Hillary Fund or whatever it's called by the Russians. And then they get control over 1/5 of the world's of the U.S. uranium. Uranium and plutonium is what nukes are made out of, folks. It is the worst, some of the worst pay to play mess going on you can imagine. There's so much collusion and corruption. This is why they are adamant that Trump worked with the Russians, because they can't believe that they didn't win. And Hillary had to make up this malarkey, and she's doing all this what happened booked because she wants to run again. So you get the point. That's pretty much it for today, folks. And, you know, my little last minute plug. I'm telling you, right now, you want some gold. We got a nice remaining group, maybe 15 nice pre-1933 U.S. gold pieces. In fact, all pre-1933 U.S. gold I love, okay? Even if it's better date stuff, it's just, there's just great ways to invest, great ways to sink your money. We have an incredible selection of better dollars, okay? Morgan Silver Dollars, the number one performing, number one collectible in the world. You want to put something away. You want to really have a nice investment for future family members or heirloom stuff. This is what you do. You want to put something away, make 5 to 15% a year, year after year. That's what you do. You can have a precious metals base, which is, you know, where you we include, like I said, emergency funds, barter material. And then we just build these well-balanced portfolios where you are set and ready to go. Everything's anonymous. It's tangible. It's immediately liquid. It's transportable. It's unlike anything else. It's the most liquid asset on earth. If you decided at 4 o'clock you wanted to buy a house and had to write a check by 5 o'clock, if you got in here, you can have the money and be out of here in that amount of time. You can't do that anywhere else. There's no questions asked. So Coins Plus is the place, folks. I'm telling you, interesting times to say the least. Don't miss this buying opportunity. Build a nice solid portfolio. We can deal with any quantity of money you got. Give us a call, 444-0044. Be sure and look up the old radio shows on the website, coinsplus.com. Take care. God bless. Be back Friday. Bye-bye.